Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston, Texas, Canada, Monterey, Faraday.
It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumble Justice Radio Show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely, since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumble Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Well, thank you so much, Audrey, and yes, a lot of fingers were crossed tonight, and we did get on the show without a technical glitch. And folks were listening last week or replayed the show, you found out we ended up with only about 30 minutes of the show, I guess 33 exactly. And there was something wrong. It said I was on the air, but we weren't streaming live. And we got some help from the live help people on Blog Talk Radio, which was fun and useful, and we finally got on the air after about 30 minutes. But tonight we're on, and it's good. This is the Blog Talk Radio Network, and I'm Keith Haley, the host of the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I think we're up to show 95 or 96. I think of all that time, we've had trouble maybe three times on a technical glitch, or with a technical glitch, but that's in the past, and I think we'll run smooth from now on. Ladies and gentlemen, I did notice in one of the Blog Talk news radio updates that Blog Talk Radio Network is now the largest radio network in the world. Isn't that incredible? And some of you have heard the history of it, but 2 years ago they started with one little show with five or six members of the family talking to each other, and that was it. And now they're literally 100,000 shows archived on the Blog Talk Radio Network. And I went through tonight looking at some shows, and one of the ones I saw there, I was wondering why universities and colleges aren't making more use of that. I don't think there's a lot of it, but I did see that the Columbia University is now using it, and their School of Journalism actually has a show, and they're introducing their professors to new incoming students through the radio network. What a nice idea. Seems like more colleges and universities should be doing that. But anyway, tonight we're going to have an interesting show. Emily and Mike, thank you for being with us tonight and gathering up some news for us. And Audrey, once again, thanks for getting us on the show without a technical glitch. The purpose of our show is the same it is every week. We discuss news issues, events, developments, and this always difficult field of criminal justice practice. And we dedicate this show to those courts, corrections, police, and juvenile justice professionals who protect us throughout the United States and indeed throughout the world. Nowadays, what we try to do in this show is look inside the practice of criminal justice and take a close look at the professionals who do this difficult work. And I can say, knowing literally thousands and thousands of them over the years, most of them thoroughly enjoy what they're doing in this field. Well, again, you're hearing the show on the magic of Blog Talk Radio, And Alan Levy is the CEO, and we thank him again for starting a marvelous technical venture like this, and his telecommunications executive experience has come through. And look at the size of this network. Some of these, I'd say probably majority of these shows use advertising and draw a great deal of attention to the Blog Talk radio network. What's possible in this network is for someone like you, this network that's now one of the WebWare's top 100 websites in the world also, what a distinction when you think they're alongside places like Google and YouTube and MyPlace and MySpace, things like that. So what's possible is any person, interest group, organization can have their own radio show broadcasting and streaming audio worldwide to an unlimited number of listeners, and it's absolutely free. The incredible thing about that, every one of those elements are important. Streams live, goes worldwide to an unlimited number of listeners, and then the show is archived within 10 or 12 minutes after it's over, and it can be played time and time again, as some people around the country use our shows when we have special guests or special topics that they're interested in. They've used them in criminal justice classes and some other ways with their students. So I always say, get your own show, just like that motto in the back of Cheez-Its. Tonight we're going to do something very special. We'll have our usual segment of In the News and take any listener calls, should there be any. But when the summer's over here, we'll probably be having more guests. But tonight we're going to do something very interesting. I've always been interested in book collecting and books. I've never done it, but I know someone who does do that. He happens to be a farmer. And he says he has to do something in the wintertime, so he buys and sells and trades books. What a very interesting hobby, and it doesn't take probably a year or two of that where you begin to get a feel for what's really working business-wise out in that book trading and book collecting market. And then years ago, one of the gentlemen who has a chapter in a book that I co-authored and edited with two other people called Critical Issues in Campus Policing, John Kleberg at Ohio State University, started out as a detective and ended up as an officer and ended up detective and chief of police, later a vice president of the university at Ohio State University. And he was an expert on rare book theft and security. And what a topic that is. I mean, you probably realize that some of these books in precise libraries around the country are absolutely priceless. I probably said this once or twice before on the show, but when we did a national conference on that subject at the University of Cincinnati, we had people come in from all over the country and Mexico and Canada to attend that conference on critical issues in campus policing. He did the presentation, of course, on rare books. And that very week, they caught some guy outside of Oberlin College up here in northern Ohio who was in a station wagon. He had a box in the back with 1,100 index cards of rare books and their precise location in libraries all over the United States. I would say that's big-time theft. But our show tonight is going to be entitled Bunko Squad, The Bookworm. And it's a show about detectives working on a bunko squad. And you would think something like book collecting, book theft would be a rather innocuous type of business, but I think one of the morals of this story is this, or lessons from the story, is that all crime can be dangerous. So I think you'll enjoy it. It's a show that goes all the way back to the 1950s. It didn't last long. I think it was one of those ones that was perhaps a little too specialized for the general audience. So that's what we'll do tonight after we take a look at the news. If you choose to call in tonight, you can call in on 347-996-5983. There's also a click-to-talk button now on the computer website where you can call into the show without using any of your phone minutes, landlined or cell phone or otherwise. So anyway, that's what we'll do. Audrey, you have a very interesting blonde joke for tonight, and I think we make history tonight in blonde jokes because we now approach a topic of aliens in outer space. Am I correct? Is that what you're... That's the one you're going to use tonight. Okay. Audrey, I might point out, is a blonde, and she is from London, England, and she's been a collector of blonde jokes all her life. She's not offended by blonde jokes whatsoever. So Audrey, go ahead and give us this blonde joke. This one is about UFOs.
Professor Haley, our joke about a blonde tonight takes us to the issue of outer space and alien invaders. I do hope you like it. By the way, I do think that Mike believes we have had visitors from other planets. A flying saucer landed at a gas station on a lonely country road. The two space aliens inside seemed completely unconcerned about detection. In fact, the letters UFO were emblazoned in big bold letters on one side of their shiny craft. As the station owner stood and gawked in silence, paralyzed with shock, his young, blonde attendant nonchalantly filled up the tank, and then waved to the two aliens as they took off. "Do you realize what just happened?" the station owner finally uttered. "Yeah," said the blonde attendant. "So, didn't you see the space aliens in that vehicle?" "Yeah," repeated the blonde. "So, didn't you see the letters UFO on the side of that vehicle?" "Yeah," repeated the blonde attendant. "So, don't you know what UFO means?" The blonde attendant rolled her eyes. "Good grief, boss. I've been working here for 5 years. Of course I know what UFO means. It means unleaded fuel only. Anyone knows that."
UFO. Audrey, have you ever been to Roswell? No. You should go there sometime. It's interesting. They have a couple museums that will catch your eye, and kind of a weird town. I think when I was driving through on the way back there from Arizona, it got a little bit spooky. I come in about 6 o'clock in the evening, as I recall, and the power was out in a major part of the city. So, whoa, that was a little bit weird. Well, thank you very much for that. On a much more serious note, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll have a couple of news stories tonight relative to this. It seems like gang violence, stemming from a number of sources in the United States and happening in a number of cities is increasing. And the High Coalition Against Gun Violence has a public service announcement that we like to assist them with and play. And it's a message, I believe it's a message to the gangbangers and the gangers on the street who carry firearms. And the message is that gun violence is not good. And I suppose that they should get out and turn in their firearms. So, Ohio Coalition, let's listen to your public service announcement, fine as it is.
Carrying concealed handguns in Ohio? It's a deadly idea. A message from the Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence.
Well, thank you very much, Ohio Coalition, and it certainly is a deadly idea. Let's go ahead and take a look at some of these news stories tonight. There is so much in the criminal justice news tonight. I think I've probably told you before that, I have one of these custom-made Google newspapers, and I don't know if you've ever chosen to do that, but you can pick your news by subject on a daily, well, it's not daily, it's updated faster than an hour, on an hourly basis, and you can have your own newspaper ready for you in the morning or the evening, or whenever you choose to read it throughout the day or night. And I have mine tuned for police and prisons, the law, surveillance cameras, illegal immigration, Romania, and a couple of other topics. And it saves you looking around. You know, most of the time when you scan a newspaper on the Internet anyway, or even sitting at home or somewhere else with a print edition, you kind of go for the sections you want anyway, and you don't read anything, so why not customize your newspaper? So that's a wonderful free service that Google has, and I won't go into what you can do with their Google Notebook, but you can literally also click things off the note with Google Notebook and click news articles and save them. This first story is kind of interesting since we spent, the Olympics started, I believe, last Friday night, whenever it was, for the opening ceremony, but I've been paying close attention to particularly our American reporters and some of those British exports that have come over here who have chose to leave Great Britain and work for companies here. But just a steady diatribe of hits on the nation of China about everything is going wrong. It started with the opening, well, it started before that. You know, they had too much security, too much surveillance cameras, too much of this and too much of that. And I said right away, if you don't like China in that regard, you don't like city Beijing, why in the world did you pick it as Olympic City? But anyway, China's trying to do their best, I think, to provide the safest and the best Olympics that they can under the conditions of their country. But here's one I thought was a little bit over the top. And this is one of the members of the International Olympic Committee. He's a Norwegian, Gerhard Heiberg. He's all in a flap now over the issue of the Chinese military and the Chinese police not smiling enough. Can you believe that? He says the police and the military, they need to act differently. They have stony faces, he says. They're seriously scaring the foreigners in Beijing, and something has to be done. Well, I guess the grin and wave squad is, as beat patrol officers used to often call those who had the good fortune or misfortune of walking a beat. They would call them the grin and wave squad, but I guess they're going to have to send some consultants over there and get those Chinese police officers to do more smiling. He says the fact that they're armed and that they look sinister just makes things worse, he says. Heiberg said he had talked to China's political authorities and the Olympic organizers about the issue. I asked them to get people to smile more, he said, noting that this request was met with laughs. I guess he got them to smile. He should go out on the street and tell them the same thing. But I, you know, come on, let's leave them alone. And then this morning on public radio, I hear a newscaster complaining that he went to see various Olympic athletic events, and he was disappointed in the snack foods. He couldn't find a hot dog. He couldn't find this. Somebody ought to, you know, peck him on the shoulder and let him know he is in China. So there might have been something there. You know, who knows what they can buy in that circumstance. But I thought that was a little bit over the top to get all excited about that. There's kind of an interesting news story that comes out of Orlando, and a sad story for sure, but the story has to do with this young 11-year-old boy, and guess what he decides to go out and do? He goes out and decides to pull a robbery, and he's 11 years old, and he goes into a Walgreens store with what looked like two handguns. A veteran lieutenant said the incident left him shaking his head, especially since the child walked into the business alone. One of the workers called 911 when the robbery was still in progress. Orlando officers were able to catch the 11-year-old as he went from the store. The pistols in his possession turned out to be those BB guns, but the child did get money from the store's register. I guess there are laws now in various places around the country, at least city ordinances, that you can't have firearms that look identical to real guns. When I was growing up, you could, and my gosh, you could have firearms that were. I remember having a Thompson submachine gun. I think I got it for Christmas. Did I grow up in a weird family or what? No, you know, many children had guns like that, and they were fun to play with. But those replications are becoming illegal now because I guess some people, maybe this young man, doesn't have good sense to know what the difference between play and the real business of crime. But isn't that a crazy circumstance for him to go out and do something like that? Here's another one I thought was interesting. There's a police chief in Arkansas, and it looks like this town. I didn't look it up on the map. It's Helena, West Helena. That must be its own incorporation, west of Helena. Mayor James Valley there, he has ordered around-the-clock curfew and heavy police patrol in a 10-block section of town because the neighborhood was under siege with repeated gunfire, loitering, drug dealing, and other general mayhem, he says. Valley ordered the emergency curfew this past Thursday. It was still in place today. He said it would remain in place as long as the problems persist until the city council came along with a long-term plan at its August 19th council meeting. Thursday night, 18 to 20 police officers, last Thursday, were carrying M16 rifles, shotguns, and night vision scopes and they patrolled this curfew zone. They arrested about 8 people and confiscated drugs and loaded weapons. So I guess it's working, this crackdown. Under Valley's orders, officers do not tolerate loitering or hanging out. Officers can stop and investigate all foot traffic, bicycle, horseback, moped, motorcycle, riding mower, golf cart, or other means of transportation. Doesn't leave much for you to get around on, does it? Maybe quad lines or rollerblades. The American Civil Liberties Union of Arkansas said the curfew is blatantly unconstitutional, has demanded that Valley lift the order immediately. But, you know, sometimes you have to do things like that, and I guess West Helena, Arkansas, has chosen to do that very thing. It's not the only one. There's been some crackdowns and all kinds of things around the country in some of these other cities in the United States. In fact, if we have time, I'll talk about a plan that Chicago has in terms of using surveillance cameras on freeways. They're going to put up speeding cameras. New Mexico is starting that. I think it's New Mexico starting that very shortly. And New Mexico or Arizona, what they're going to do is they expect to make something like $9 million from that in a very short period of time. But, boy, the good old surveillance camera, it's really doing something. But they're going to use money from that to form task forces and to deploy them in the Chicago area and other cities that have serious gang violence and street drug dealing and that sort of thing. But this was an unusual thing, if that was something. What's going to happen in the Over the Rhine neighborhood of Cincinnati that's long been struggling, it was struggling when I was there, they're going to reestablish streetcars, and they're going to put these streetcars out there. The fares may be free, 50 cents or $1. They'll stop at 6 different hospitals, University of Cincinnati. It'll be something like a 6 to 8 mile loop, and they hope this will restore. It's a $30 million private investment and existing revenue that the city council can allocate without increasing taxes. But it's the Community Streetcar Coalition, and cities like New Orleans, Salt Lake City, Charlotte, North Carolina, and Denver and Houston are doing the same thing. So here comes the streetcar. I guess you got to think about the criminal justice perspective on this, but streetcars, I think we talked last week about some of the problems that happen on the subways and the trains in New York City in terms of a little molestation of women on those things. But they're going to see if this will work to help restore their business districts. And Cincinnati, I must say, which used to be one of the safest downtowns in America, I suspect it's not that now. I was back there not too long ago in the spring to present a paper at a conference, international conference, as a matter of fact, and didn't look good downtown. And a lot of the business, nightlife, safe nightlife, et cetera, has moved across the river. Of course, you do have the Reds and the Bengals football team and all that business. So it's going to be interesting to see if this happens. They looked at streetcars in Seattle, Tacoma, Washington, and Charlotte, North Carolina, and they found out that this should be pretty successful. And Mayor Coleman of Columbus, Ohio, is just looking at the same idea. So it'll be interesting to see if that actually gets off the ground. Now, I thought this was an interesting story about what's going to be happening in New York City. New York City is going to be starting a new surveillance and crackdown process called Operation Sentinel. It's called Operation Sentinel, and it proved just how far the New York City police will go, it says, to protect this city from terrorists. The plan involves some high-tech tracking that's coming from under fire from various civil libertarian type of groups and other groups. New York City's going to great lengths to make sure that bomb-toting terrorists can't reach us. Well, how are they going to do that? New York is something special, Mayor Bloomberg says. It's not just a very big city. In many senses, it's the iconic city. It represents Western democracy. That might be pros and cons on that position, but I know what he means. As part of the plan, New York City Police Department is creating a huge buffer zone, working with cops in a 50-mile radius of the city. Officials in New Jersey, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, and Long Island are given radiation detectors to stop terrorists as far away from New York City as possible. Police also plan to track every vehicle that enters Manhattan. We're going to be adding cameras as we go. And when they talk about adding cameras, they're not kidding. They're going to be adding literally hundreds of them. The part of the plan calls for photographing and scanning license plates of cars and trucks at all bridges and tunnels. Even small ones like the Willis Avenue Bridge will be used to detect radiation. I don't think it's hyperbole to call this big brotherish, says the New York Civil Liberties Union, Christopher Dunn. New York City Police Department is creating a huge computer database of the movement of everyone in a vehicle in Manhattan. I don't know what you think, but you've probably heard my impressions on these kind of things over the last couple of years on this radio show, and I don't like this idea. I think it's over the top, and I don't think it's necessary. Now, does that mean that one of these incidents, like 9/11, couldn't happen tomorrow again, and we should be protected? We should, but there ought to be limits to something like this. They see that it's a violation. It's ridiculous, says one of the women from Teaneck, New Jersey. She says, I don't know. I don't want everybody or somebody knowing where I'm at 24 hours of the day. The city also intends on putting lower Manhattan in a so-called ring of steel. Are you ready? With 3,000 public and private security cameras below Canal Street, there will be 600 cops assigned to that particular area alone. My heavens, the price. I realize it's a populous, congested, high population density city, but that's going to be something to see that happen. Well, I've got a couple other news stories. One here I wanted to talk about that certainly wasn't, well, not exactly criminal justice related, but I was astounded today to find in the Chronicle Higher Education that a number of schools across the country have built fancy academic centers for their athletes. Most of this money has been raised, at least they say, by private donation, alumni, that type of thing. But this all goes into the university budget, and I'm sure there's some university costs. But if you have not seen some of these places, they said that as the competition for good athletes increases, academic quality has gone down. No kidding. And so to help with that academic quality and to keep them in school, or is it to keep them in sports? I'm not sure. Building these beautiful, incredible facilities, multi-million-dollar facilities for tutoring and for special classes for them. Some of them have monitors and cameras so the students can't leave study sessions, and they can get them if they fall asleep in study centers and that type of thing. I mean, it just goes on and on. Of course, you see some of the counter here. But if you go to chronicle.com, http://chronicle.com, you can actually click on, you can't read the story unless you're a subscriber, which I am, but you can click on the little slideshow right next to the picture of one of these facilities, and you have never seen something like this. Texas A&M, for example, cost $27 million, if you can believe that. And another one costs at LSU costs $15 million. And all this is to get these athletes to study and to do better academically so they can stay in school. I never really understood why do we even have them in school? Can a college just have an athletic team like Gladiators or something like that? Put them in the minor leagues in sports or something, and I think you'd probably get increased attendance at athletic events. But this is just so over the top. And of course, many of the critics in this article or some of the critics are saying, you know, wouldn't it be nice if some of this money would be spent for the other students too. So it's on average, Oklahoma's Academic Services Office spends $6,213 per student for each of its 470 athletes, almost twice what it spent 10 years ago. Absolutely incredible, isn't it? I don't get it. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I think what we'll do now is kind of shift to our major piece for the night. And this is a story about, it's called Bunko Squad the Bookworm, and it was a radio show that aired in April of 1950. And it's an interesting story, and it's full of some surprises, and we'll see what you think of it. So here we go, Bunko Squad the Bookworm.
We interrupt this program to bring you the latest on the three-day-old hostage situation in Grand Central Station. Field correspondent Mike Anderson on the scene. Mike, what's the latest?
Well, Bill, there's rumor of good news. The mayor has just stepped up to the podium. He's about to address the hundreds of reporters and spectators, and why don't we just listen in?
Thank you all. It should come with a smile on my face that I have good news. I'm pleased to announce just about 10 minutes ago, all 14 captives were released unharmed for our hostage behavior. And Mr. Stags, that the perpetrator himself, has promised to surrender in 22 minutes to our hostage negotiators.
22 minutes, Your Honor?
Yes, we felt as though that was not an unreasonable request. We just wanted to listen to the last part of the Boxcar 711 old-time radio pod.
Well, there you go. It's not unreasonable. So even if you're at work and they got a policy against it, you march right in there. Take charge of that computer. Type in your browser, boxcars711.podomatic.com or boxcars711.libsyn.com. That's L-I-B-S-Y-N. And if your boss has a problem with that, you turn around and tell him, back off, scumbag, or you too may need a hostage negotiator. It's not unreasonable.
Around the internet, around the world, broadcasting from Dallas and Philadelphia, this is another Humphrey Camardella production.
So you think you're smart, eh? You're nobody's fool? Brother, you can be taken.
CBS presents Bunko Squad. The Bunko Artist, the Swindler, the Con Man. He comes in a thousand disguises. He has a million tricks. He can make a sucker out of you. Be on your guard. For the protection of you, the American public, we open once again tonight the files of Bunko Squad, authentic cases drawn from the police records of the nation. You will be guided through a case of Bunko step by step, as it actually happened, as it could happen to you. Now, here is your host and guide, the noted authority on Bunko schemes, Captain Frank Crumble.
Good evening. We call the confidence man a Bunko artist because, in his evil way, that's exactly what he is. The slickest, cleverest, most dangerous artist in the underworld. Perhaps you haven't thought that Bunko schemes can be dangerous. Well, then, listen.
It's just me, Wilbur. I swear that Miss Blanchard is helpless as a baby sometimes. Wilbur? Wilbur, where are you? My Blanchard never arrived. Wilbur! Wilbur!
What you just heard is part of an actual case taken from the police files of St. Louis, involving one of the most dangerous and vicious Bunko schemes ever to come to my attention. Here is the case of the bookworm. The unfortunate victim in the case of the bookworm is a man by the name of Wilbur King. Mr. King is a retired heating contractor who had managed to save up a sufficient nest egg to live modestly with his wife, Jane, in a comfortable home just off Del Mar Avenue. The Kings are honest, good, church-going folks. Actually, that's where the whole thing started. One Sunday morning in a church overlooking Forest Park. During the services, Mrs. King had noticed a strange couple staring at her and at her husband. And when the service concluded, she was surprised to find herself greeted most cordially by a woman she didn't know, had never seen before.
Why, well, and imagine running into you here. Well, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid you have us mixed up with someone else. Oh, dear Charles, they're not the Pearsons at all.
I was afraid you were mistaken, my dear.
Oh, and after the way we stared at these poor people, too.
Yes, please forgive us, folks.
Oh, isn't that true, mistake?
You see, we're new in St. Louis. We don't know a soul. I guess it was partly wishful thinking on my part. I am sorry. Not at all. I know how it is in a strange town.
Now, come now, dear. These folks aren't interested. Perhaps you could tell us where we might catch a bus to the Radcliffe Hotel on King's Highway.
Why, that's right on our way home. We'd be glad to drop you off.
Oh, I wouldn't think of putting you to all that trouble.
Nonsense. No trouble at all.
Well, it's very kind of you. I'm Charles Hollister. This is my wife, Irene.
How do you do? My name is King, and this is Mrs. King.
I'm so glad to know you.
Delighted to meet you. Yes, indeed. Most delighted.
That meeting, accidental as it may have seemed, was part of a carefully laid plan. Try to put yourself in the King's place. They were friendly people, anxious to meet any new fellow churchgoers, so naturally they offered them a lift. But even if they hadn't, it wouldn't have mattered. The Hollisters would have pursued the accidental meeting in another manner. Once the contact was accomplished, Hollister made himself as charming as possible. By the time they'd reached the Radcliffe Hotel, he persuaded the Kings to have Sunday dinner with him. And the next night, he invited them to be his guests at the Municipal Opera. And all the while, in casual, matter-of-fact conversation, Charles told Wilbur King about himself and his work, that he was a writer visiting St. Louis to do some scientific research at Washington University. And the Kings were most impressed with their newfound friends. But when the Hollisters were alone in their hotel room...
A swell pitch this is going to be. That old biddy nearly yacked my arm off. You know what she does for fun? She puts up preserves.
Well, then, baby, you're going to put up preserves and like it. Because there's a big pot of jam at the end of this rainbow. $15,000 worth.
50? Honest, Charles?
Mm-hmm.
Why, we only cased him for about 8. How'd you find out?
Oh, charm, baby. That old guy did everything but give me the key to a safety deposit box.
Oh, darling, that's wonderful. I could kiss you for that.
What's stopping you?
Nothing. You lovely hunk of man.
Mm.
Say, maybe we can shove this pitch along a little faster, huh?
Oh, don't get impatient, Cookie. It never pays to rush a mark.
Okay, honey. You're the brains.
Now, get busy and finish copying that book I got from the library.
Hi, to great, big, famous author, you.
During the next 2 weeks, Hollister played Wilbur King like a trout. It was flattering to be wined and dined by a younger, brilliant man. And an author at that. And when the game was finally set to land, Charles was ready with the gaff. He set the scene by inviting the Kings to a mysterious dinner celebration at the Chase Hall.
Oh, happy days. Oh, Mrs. King, let me fill your glass.
Oh, no, please.
That's a beautiful watch you have there, Hollister. I've been admiring it.
A beautiful watch you have, Wilbur. Here, it's yours.
Oh, no, 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 I couldn't dream
of it. Nonsense, Mr. King, you take it. Charles can afford it now.
Say, what is this mystery? I swear you've got me eaten up with curiosity.
What's happened? You haven't found a gold mine, have you?
Oh, you're not far wrong. Here, read this wire.
The Board of Education excited about your manuscripts. Wanted for high schools throughout the states.
Yeah, Hollister, that's wonderful.
Isn't it?
Read the rest of it.
Advance order confirmed at 40,000 copies. Wire me hotel senator immediately if you can deliver by October Joseph Sterling. Who's Sterling?
Oh, he's my literary agent at Jefferson City.
Oh, I'm so happy for both of you. 40,000 copies. Think of it, Jane.
A toast. To the book, everybody.
To the book.
Say, Wilbur, I've been wondering if I could ask you to do me a favor on this thing.
Of course, Charles. Anything. What is...
Well, as I was saying to Irene last night, wasn't I, honey?
Mm-hmm.
This is a tremendous break, of course, but it also means I'll have to interrupt my present work to get this book printed. Irene came up with a wonderful idea. Why not ask you to help out? You have the time, the brains, the organizational ability.
Sure. I'd be glad to do anything I could, but... Isn't that the publisher's job?
Oh, Wilbur, you don't think I'd go to a regular publisher. Accept a piddling royalty with a firm order for 40,000 books in my pocket? Oh, not in your life. I intend to publish this myself. I have a printer in Jefferson City all set to go. The way I figure, it'll cost around $30,000. I'll gross $150,000 on the order. A net profit of $120,000.
That's a lot of money.
Isn't it, though?
And it'll mean a lot of work. Every student in the state will have to use a copy of my book. And that's only the beginning. There are 47 other states. Of course, Wilbur, I wouldn't expect you to take on the selling and distributing job for nothing.
But it's out of my line.
Oh, Wilbur, nonsense. Since when is a $60,000 profit out of anybody's line?
$60,000?
Surely. Look, you come in with me and share in the initial printing costs. And as soon as the books are ready, you take over complete supervision of sales and delivery from then on. and I'll cut you in for 50% of the profit, including the order I've already got.
Wilbur, what an opportunity.
Oh, no, no, it's an opportunity for me, Mrs. King. You see, I'm a writer and a scientist. I've got no head for business, and I'm not interested in it. It'd be a godsend to have a businessman like Wilbur to handle things. A partner I can trust.
Now the enticing bait was out, and Hollister felt sure that Wilbur King would snap at it. Well, wouldn't you? A chance to make $60,000 on a $15,000 investment, and at absolutely no risk. What would you do? If you're like Mr. King, you'd probably ask for time to think it over. And you might not want to trust your own judgment completely. You might, as Mr. and Mrs. King did, seek advice from your lawyer.
Let me guess, Common. The Monsanto stock, brown shoe. Wilbur, do you realize you're selling everything you own?
Sure, John, we realize it, but it's only for a short time.
60 days, Mr. Hollister said.
I don't know. I don't like this.
But it's such an opportunity, and the Hollisters are such nice people.
You said yourself that Hollister was perfectly right to handle this himself instead of through a publisher.
I know.
Well, he's leaving for Jefferson City to pay the printer in a day or two. And I've got to put up half the money if I want to share in the profit.
And it's just that I hate to see you take a chance with practically all the money you've got.
What kind of chance?
Why, Mr. Hollister is known and respected by every big scientist and educator you can name. You should see the letters he has from them.
Stationery can be obtained and letters can be forged.
Forged? Why, you suspicious old codger.
Well, that's what lawyers are paid for, Wilbur. To be suspicious old codgers.
But what about the telegram from Mr. Sterling saying that the Board of Education had agreed to take 40,000 copies of the book?
Say, I've got that wire right here in my pocket. I forgot to return it to Charles.
May I see it, please?
Sure.
Sterling, eh? Excuse me a moment. Miss Kennedy, put through a person-to-person call to Mr. Joseph Sterling at the Hotel Senator in Jefferson City. Buzz me when you've got him. Thank you. Just an extra precaution, Wilbur. I'm sure your friend, Mr. Hollister, would appreciate that you're the type of man who makes a thorough investigation of a deal before he puts up his life savings.
But Charles and Irene are such wonderful people, I'm sure why they wouldn't even suggest
that. Of course they wouldn't. This is just plain foolishness, John. I've been a pretty fair judge of men in my time, and I tell you...
I know, Wilbur, but a man can always be wrong. We'll see. Hello. Mr. Sterling? Mr. Joseph Sterling? Mr. Sterling, this is Judge Rowan in St. Louis. I represent Mr. and Mrs. Wilbur King in connection with a partnership that they are forming with a Mr. Charles Hollister. Yes? Yes. I understand that you are Mr. Hollister's literary agent. I see. Oh, really? Well, about the order from the Board of Education. Yes? Yes, 40,000 copies of the book. I see. Yes, I see. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Sterling. Goodbye.
Well, what did he say?
He says it's the greatest book of its kind he's ever handled. He says the 40,000 order is only the beginning. He expects every school system in the country to take it.
Well, what do you say now?
I knew it. What an opportunity. The Hollisters are such wonderful people.
Yes, the Hollisters were very wonderful people. And smart, too. Smart enough to have their accomplice, Mr. Sterling, waiting in Jefferson City just on the chance that the Kings might call him. Naturally, he confirmed the order. And so John Rowan, the lawyer, had to admit that the deal sounded okay. And Wilbur King sold out his securities, his only bulwark against old age, and handed Charles Hollister a check for $15,000. The next day, the Hollisters left for Jefferson City to sign the contract with the printer, they said. The bunco scheme had worked.
I'm going across the street to Miss Blanchard for a few minutes, dear. Why, what's the matter?
Oh, nothing. Only we haven't heard a word from Charles and Irene for over 2 weeks.
Yes, that is strange, isn't it? Well, I'll be back in 10 minutes. I do hope nothing's wrong. They're such nice
fortune.
Yes. Such nice people. Operator, get me the Hotel Senator in Jefferson City. That's right, Charles Hollister. But I know he went there. Are you sure? Never registered? Thank you. Boatman's Bank? Chief Teller, please. He cashed the check the same day? Yes, I understand the check was in order. Of course you had to honor it. Operator, I want to put in another call to Jefferson City, the purchasing agents of the Board of Education.
It's just me, Wilbur. I swear that Miss Blanchard is helpless as a baby sometimes. Wilbur, Wilbur, where are you? My Landry never arrived. Wilbur! Oh. Wilbur!
We'll return to Captain Trumbull and tonight's Bunko Squad story in just a moment. To politely paraphrase history, George Burns while Gracie fiddles, and the result is, of course, the laugh riot heard every Wednesday evening over many of these same CBS stations. George and Gracie are two of America's best purveyors of nonsense, and two neighbors everyone enjoys visiting. You can never tell what Gracie has up her sleeve, but you can always bet it'll get George into trouble. Be sure not to miss the Burns and Allen Show this Wednesday and every Wednesday at that spot on your dial marked CBS. Now, here's Captain Trumbull again to continue tonight's Bunko Squad story, The Bookworm.
In a game as carefully constructed as a fine watch, Charles Hollister had, as the Bunko artist would say, roped his mark, told him the tale, given him the convincer, and had taken off a nice touch of $15,000. As a result, Wilbur King was in emergency hospital at death's door and attempted suicide. The next day, Mrs. King went down to police headquarters and told her story.
Do you recognize any of the pictures, Mrs. King?
No. I've stared at these pictures until they're all beginning to look alike. Lieutenant Scott, I didn't want to come here. I should be at the hospital.
Mr. King is in competent hands. You can help him best by helping us catch these suspects.
I still can't believe it. They were such nice people.
They're always nice people, Mrs. King. When you've gone over all the pictures, will you come into Detective Levesque's office and make out a crime report, please?
Yes, Lieutenant, I will.
I'll wait for you there. No luck yet, Lee. She's still looking.
She'll sign a complaint?
Oh, yes. She's upset, but she'll come through.
Here's all we've got to go on, Skipper. It's not much.
Oh, this a book? Authentic looking job, all right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see what you can do with it.
Will do. And this watch.
Beautiful. Well, what's the connection?
Oh, King admired it, and Hollister took it off his wrist and handed it over.
Oh.
You know these con men when they're building up a mark.
Lend me your knife, will you, Lee?
Sure. Here.
Serial number. Hey, jot this down. 523-1418. Gruen.
I'll run a make on it. Say, did you see the piece in the Globe this morning about King shooting himself?
Yeah. And if Hollister sees it, he'll take off for the moon.
Maybe he won't see it.
Fat chance. Anybody as smart as that bird is watching the papers, all right.
Lieutenant Scott had his con man figured correctly. After paying off their confederate, Joe Sterling, for his assist in answering the telephone in Jefferson City, Charles and Irene Hollister were taking it easy between jobs at the Hotel Southern in Memphis.
Charlie.
Charles.
Oh, don't bother me. Can't you see I'm reading?
Oh, that silly St. Louis paper. What's so interesting in St. Louis you have to read the paper every day?
Just careful, sweetie. You never know when a sucker might get panicky and run to the coffers. Doesn't it cost much to just...
What's the matter? They held a copper already?
Oh, worse than that. That jerk King shot himself.
Oh, no, let me see.
Here.
Wilbur King, 54. Cause given his despondency when a team of confidence workers bilked him out of his life savings. Why, that stupid...
Conditioned very critical. You know what that means? If he dies, that's technical murder.
Chuck, they can't track us, can they? We were careful.
Shut up and let me think. Tried to cover everything. There's nothing in the book.
He didn't write any checks.
Oh, what do you take me for? No, I didn't do anything they can... Wait a minute.
What is it?
My wristwatch. I gave it to King, remember?
It wasn't engraved, was it?
It might as well have been. It's got a serial number, and I used my right name when I bought it.
Oh, no.
In Toledo, remember?
I might have known, you stupid fool. You wouldn't pull a bonehead play like that. Now you've got it.
Now, don't you crack up on me. That's all I need.
But they'll trace
it.
Why?
It may take days. And if I have anything to say about it, I'll never trace it. Come on, now, start packing. We've got a long drive ahead of us. Everything clear?
Yeah, I think so. Oh, Chuck, I don't like this.
And I love it, I suppose,
I
huh?
I don't know, but...
Look, you just keep this car running. I'll be out as soon as I can. I've got to get the sales record from that jewelry store before the cops trace that watch.
Be careful, Chuck. Please.
December. Step on it.
Yeah.
Keep going, we can make it. Take the next corner fast.
We made it.
Don't stop. Keep this thing moving.
Yeah. Did you get the record?
No, the alarm went off before I could find it.
They'll never get it now. The cops will blanket this place in no time.
Yeah, I know. Head for St. Louis.
St. Louis? Why?
I've got to get that watch back. Our only chance is that Mrs. King hasn't told the cops about it. Now step on it.
When things were going his way, Hollister was a smooth, affable con man. But now, in trouble, over his debt, cornered, the veneer came off to reveal him for what he was. A desperate, dangerous criminal, ready to stop at nothing. Meantime, in St. Louis, Bunko Squad was making headway. Detectives Scott and LeBec were beginning to fit parts of the puzzle into place.
Hello, Lee. What's new on the King case?
Well, this for one thing. I got it at the public library.
A book, huh? Science Progresses by James Widmark. Published 1941.
Mm-hmm. And guess what?
Yeah, I know. The manuscript Hollister showed Mr. King is an exact copy, word for word.
You're right. No wonder King thought it looked okay.
Well, that locks up the intent to defraud angle.
Yeah. Oh, say, here's something else. I got a report from the manufacturer on the watch Hollister gave King. It was sold by Levine and Wise in Toledo.
Levine and Wise?
Yeah. Why? What's up?
I just saw a teletype. Levine and Wise were knocked over last night.
Uh-oh.
That isn't all. Nothing was taken.
What?
But all the sales records were disturbed. This is a break, Lee. Hollister must have broken into the jewelry store trying to get the sales slip on that watch. That means he bought it in his own name.
Yeah.
And suppose he didn't get the sales slip.
Well, we can check that.
If he didn't, he might come back and try to get the watch. On the chance that Mrs. King forgot to tell us about it. Lee, get that watch out of property, will you?
Sure, sure. Well, what have you got in mind?
I think it might be a good idea to give it back to Mrs. King.
I'm scared.
Oh, stop it. You're getting me jittery, too. 7 years without a hitch, and then this has to happen.
Suppose something goes wrong.
For Pete's sake, lay off. Look, we cased the house for 2 days, haven't we?
Yes.
Not a cop in sight. She goes to the hospital, she comes home. It's all clear, I tell you.
I'd feel better if you ditched that gun.
I said I wouldn't use it, didn't I? Okay. Here we go.
Chuck, remember, no gun.
Oh, brace up, Cookie. We won't need a gun. Get Connor out of that. Watch the line fall in. Okay, honey. We're on. Don't forget to keep her occupied while I look for the lock.
Irene. Mr. Hollis.
Darling, I'll bet you thought we'd never get back.
We sure missed you folks.
I'll say.
Say, where's Wilbur, the old son of a gun? Wait till he sees what I've got for him.
Where's the check?
Oh, and what a check. First return, $64,000. Why, didn't Wilbur get my wire?
Why? No.
Can you beat that? Well, half of this is Wilbur's.
What? Darling, what's the matter?
Wilbur's in the hospital. What? He shot himself.
Oh, no. Yes. Oh, poor dear.
He thought you'd swindled him.
Swindled? He thought that?
Yes.
Oh, but that's terrible. Because he didn't hear from us. Oh, then it's all our fault. Oh, my dear.
Oh, no. Please don't feel that way. Oh. Why, where did Mr. Hollis go?
Mrs. King, don't go in there. Why, Mr. Hollis?
I thought I told you to keep her.
Well, you accept it. All the noise you were making.
All right, turn the chatter and let's blow. Fast.
You got the watch?
Yeah. Come on.
Then you are seen.
Oh, shut up.
What do we do with the old lady, Chuck? We can't leave her loose now.
Yeah. In the closet.
Yep.
Come on, Grandma. In you go.
No, please. No.
Here.
No.
One peep out of you, you'll get this gun across your head. Get in there now. Slow down now.
Yeah.
I don't want anybody to see us worrying.
You sure she'll be all right, Chuck?
Stop worrying about her. Somebody will find her. Get in the car.
King, you're safe now.
They were just here. They took the watch.
We know all about it, Mrs. King. We've been staked out here for several days. I saw every move they made through the window just now. You were in no danger.
You were outside? Then why didn't you stop them?
We let them go on purpose. Lieutenant Scott is trailing them right now, right to wherever they've hidden your money. I hope.
New Orleans, Galveston, and Mexico City.
That does, Chuck. Hurry.
Not until we get that little package.
Got the locker key?
What a question. Let's see. Number 587. 56.
Chuck, hurry.
Relax, beautiful, relax. Plenty of time.
That's right, Hollister.
What?
Plenty of time. About 10 years apiece, I'd say.
Oh!
Why, you don't you...
You want it this way.
Hey, Chuck!
All right. Get up.
Yeah.
Hold out those hands.
Yes.
And I'll just take that package out of the locker, if you
now
don't mind.
Look, you've got nothing on us. I want an attorney. I know my rights.
Oh, brother. If only one of you would think up a different line. Just once.
Folks, that's the CBS show Bunko Squad. Pretty good one. little fraud scheme there, and the detectives in St. Louis and St. Joseph solved that crime. So, very good story. We're working on a show. I'll tell you more about that later, on having some real private detectives on the show. But in the meantime, stay tuned. Look on the website to see what's coming up for the next show, and we'll be seeing you soon, I'm sure.
Again, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Like you always do, till the blue sky drive the dark. far away. So will you please say hello to the folks that I know? Tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was singing this song. We meet again. Don't know when, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day.